This is an ABC podcast.
Hey, this is Earshot. I'm Miyuki Okiranta. During the COVID pandemic, many Australian families have been forced to wonder, for the first time, where their next meal will come from. Online searches for food relief have skyrocketed over the past 4 months. 6 kilometres from Sydney's CBD, in a suburb called Marrickville, there's a community group doing their best to help manage the crisis. As well as its ongoing low-cost food pantry, Addison Road Community Organisation has set up an emergency hamper operation. With an army of volunteers and high-profile support, the team has delivered thousands of boxes all over Sydney and as far as Walgett in the state's north. As New South Wales emerges from lockdown, the ABC's Mike Williams shares a portrait of Addie Road.
Six-year-old Michael Dung has had a productive pandemic lockdown.
Pretty good. Every day I went to the park and been riding my bike.
Are you watching anything at the moment on TV?
Not really. I don't really watch TV a lot, you know.
He doesn't have time. He's too busy making art.
Oh, wow.
This one he made 3 weeks ago, I think.
Whoa, so we've got a robot with some alfoil on it.
Michael's craft projects are beautiful. His chosen medium is cardboard boxes. They're the boxes that are delivered each week full of food from community group Addie Road.
And tell me what this one is, Michael. What is this?
Uru.
Oh, this is the diorama of Uluru.
In July, the Dung family took a serious financial hit. Overnight, Michael's mum wasn't able to work at her job as a kitchen hand at a Japanese restaurant.
My name is Tai Kim Dung. I am single parent. My friend is live far here, and it's quite hard for me to go shopping usually to buy food.
As COVID cases rose, Kim was hesitant to take Michael anywhere, and there was no one to mind him. Then there were the extra costs.
He loved reading, so that's why I'm so worried about it. I can't borrow book from library. Also by medicine, because during lockdown so I got stressful.
It's a stressful time. As well as the food hamper, which Kim can stretch to last the entire week, Addie Road was able to provide Michael with books and Play-Doh. They knew Kim's situation because Michael went to a Vietnamese playgroup at Addie Road.
How much does it help?
A lot. We are so lucky. I told my son, so we are so lucky we live in Australia with Addison Road Charity. So good, help us to pass very hard time.
With lockdown ending, hopefully the harshest times are over. This week, Michael goes back to school. Kim's work will start up again soon too. I walk away thinking about luck. Kim's lucky to be part of the Addie Road community. But when it comes to food, is it fair that some Australians should have to rely on luck? Not far away, a large community hall has been overrun with pallets. They're stacked with food to be packed or delivered. In the corner, there's a person in charge of the cardboard boxes.
Vivian.
Vivian, good to meet you. Just tell me what you're doing here.
Okay, we're putting the stickers on the boxes and making them, and we want them to know that we're packing them with love and that we care about people.
The boxes move to the next stage in the production line.
Okay, so what's the first thing you got here?
We've got some Vita Wheat biscuits, a kilo of sugar, a kilo of rice, and a kilo of flour.
Volunteer Claire pushes it down a long table, dropping items in as she goes.
Tinned legumes.
A box is filling up quick.
Some baked beans.
There's tea.
Tinned tomatoes.
Vegemite. Disinfectant.
Tea.
2 minute noodles. Yeah, and to top it off, some chocolate.
And it fills it up.
I give them a little bit extra.
Oh, do you? Yeah.
And then it goes like this.
This operation is powered each week by hundreds of volunteers. All of them told me that they get more out of it than they give. Like Matthew West.
I'm the only one in my family. I'm the last survivor. I'm it. That's how the die was cast and how the cards fell.
Matthew comes in early, every morning.
I just felt a bit switched off to the world. you get a bit insular and you just sort of just look inwards all the time.
Like so many people, he found living alone to be incredibly isolating during lockdown. But this place lifted his spirits, gave him a place to be.
We all worked together and I sort of opened up after that. They thought I was the Incredible Hulk because I used to wear a pair of blue torn work jeans and a green shirt. And I come in and work, and I thought, because it was, I was really strong, but it was nothing to do with being strong. It was just the appearance of the clothing was all torn and shredded.
So everyone's calling you the Incredible Hulk.
But then my humour came back, you see, and that's the magic of being with people. It gives you something to look forward to each day, be part of a community again.
You go away after a few hours thinking, yeah, I actually did something. I can feel it in my muscles, you know.
Flip's moving heavy sacks of potatoes and onions. Others sort a mix of fruit and veg into individual paper bags.
We've lost so much agency. You know, we feel so powerless. And for me, kind of doing something really small lets you take some of that power back in a weird way.
Like many, Flip's surprised that Sydney, my city of Sydney, is in need of a food relief operation like this one.
It's pretty vivid. When you see it with your own eyes, you're like, oh, wow, this is actually happening. People in Sydney don't like to think of, you know, ourselves as being in that kind of situation, but it's a reality for lots of people. It makes me really uncomfortable the way we're talking about freedom and back to normal, and I kind of keep thinking about the people who are vulnerable, who it's not going to be that easy for them. They're not just going to bounce back after, you know, 2 years of this.
So we go in strategic points. We've just got Barella now. These strategically placed hubs ensure that nobody goes without.
Across the car park from the hall, Addie Road CEO Rosanna Barbero shows me a map with thumbtacks all over it. The distribution points are spread all across the city.
I look at it as a cliff, and there's people that are here, some here, and some really close to the edge, and some about to go over. People, when they think of poverty in cities or when they think of poverty in Australia, they always think it's because, oh, they're the down and outs. They've always been there. You know, you're always going to have a percentage of poor people, a percentage of whatever that, you know, they just exist in society. But people don't realise this other increasing inequality and the fragility of that. It is so fragile. It doesn't take much. That's what really frightens me with the situation. It's like people are two paychecks away from couch surfing, you know? That gap is growing. And I mean, we have the statistics, and why aren't we angry? Inequality is a deliberate system that appropriates wealth and it puts it into the hands of a few.
Rosanna started here in 2020, just as the pandemic hit. The first thing she did was commission a report.
We discovered people were going without meals.
What was the reason? Why was that?
Casualisation of jobs. Also, we found a lot of women, women who in their 50s, they lost their jobs or finally left their partners after the children grew up. And, you know, they're left with nothing.
There can be more general reasons too. Domestic violence, intergenerational culture clashes, lack of unskilled work and offshore manufacturing, international students with limited working hours, folk from rural areas coming to the city to look for work. The list goes on.
And then that's another one, the people that you don't think of as being in trouble, and that's people that have overextended with loans. So car loans, mortgages, private school fee loans. People don't have sympathy for these people, but I do, because they're living pretty okay lives until one loses a job. And that just throws everything into a spin. So whatever people's difficulties are, we can't judge it. The fact is it's difficult.
Packing thousands of hampers a week is new for Addie Road. The Addie Road Food Pantry, though, has been around for years. It's a very low-cost supermarket run by volunteers that sells food that otherwise might be thrown out because, for example, it might be close to its use-by date.
We were set up. So it's the perfect organisation that during a crisis you upscale and you respond.
There's more I want to ask Rosanna, but our chat's cut short.
He's outside. You've got to meet him. He's just beautiful. And, you know, these
she keeps wanting to introduce me to people.
Rosanna!
Arlie, darling, where are you?
I'm just driving around the back now. I just dropped off the Esky.
At the moment with the pandemic, people are really struggling. We're very fortunate to be lending a hand, and that's the most important thing.
Ali is a giant, not physically, although he is quite tall. No, Ali works for the GWS Giants AFL Footy Club. He runs their community program.
In fact, his wife thinks he's having an affair with Hampers and Addy Road, and she doesn't want to hear it because he's 7 days a week.
We're just, a piece in a puzzle.
And it is a puzzle. The Giants are just one of many, many community groups and organisations that interconnect with Addy Road by providing the food or delivering the hampers.
Yeah, you get stuck sometimes being in the car park, but it's not too bad.
Ali introduced me to his colleague, Omar. He's agreed to take me out on a delivery run.
This is not a job for me. This is a passion. This is a dream. One of the famous Islamic proverbs, if one limb is injured, it's as if the whole body feels its pain, and it's the obligation of the body to nurse that limb back to health. I see myself and I see the Addison Road and I see the GWS Giants as a collective, as that body, and we're nursing our community back to health. We're trying to make it as homely and as comfortable for them as possible, because we want to make sure when the people receive their hampers, they're making a full use of them and they feel like they're making home-cooked meals rather than just handouts.
Many volunteers proudly told me that Addy Road customised boxes to match preference or cultural need. Celebrity chef Kylie Kwong curates two different types of Asian hampers, and I saw her down there packing them.
We're not delivering meals, we're not delivering hampers, we're not delivering food. We're delivering dignity. We're giving people their dignity back, because it's not common that someone likes to put their hand out and ask for help. This is not something we want to do forever. We just want to try and get them up and going, rocking and rolling. And a donation service means I give you something, you go and do it. A dignity service means I give you the resource and you make something of it for yourself.
Okay, so we've arrived somewhere. Where are we?
We've arrived. We're in an apartment block in the East Lake Smithington area. We're here to provide a hamper for a young family. Are you going to follow me up there?
Yeah.
Yeah, cool.
What'd you get?
What didn't we get?
Just a whole bunch of fruit, veggies, stuff that you can just snack on, soup, meat.
Loitering outside the food pantry, I meet Roxy and Tash. They've been in drug rehabilitation for the past 13 months, almost the whole pandemic.
I've got our medallion, went over to transition, which is 3 months, and then exit, which is six months. Not 6 months.
Sorry, my bad. I don't know what's on my mind.
Where's your head at?
So it's been hard, like, transitioning back into the real world.
What have been the big challenges and the big wins? I'll just wait for that plane, sorry.
Tash told me that the first 2 weeks out were depressing. Finding her feet was difficult. But she has a job, and she's using the tools she learnt during rehab, like how to sit with uncomfortable feelings without using drugs.
Almost there.
Okay.
Just wait another 6 seconds. Sorry. Sorry. Do you have a lot of family support?
I've got a little bit of family support, but it's that's a complicated question. But yes, I think the main thing is just cherishing what I have, and having a service like this means the world to us.
In Addy Road's DNA is multiculturalism.
Sports broadcaster and refugee advocate Craig Foster has been coming down to Addy Road now for several years. Foz was coming down so much that Rosanna said he needed a title. That's how he became an ambassador.
Now, all of this can build a new unity, but you've got to start at the grassroots.
You know, the story of Addison Road Community Centre goes way back to the First World War, when light horses, you know, infantry horses who were housed here. But then in the early 70s, under Whitlam, this organisation was turned into perhaps the first truly multicultural centre in the country.
there are some Australians who still see themselves as the only Australians.
At a time in the early 70s, of course, when the White Australia policy was only being disbanded by Whitlam, communities were encouraged to come here and celebrate their own backgrounds and cultures and language.
Immigration Minister Al Grasby called this place one small world.
Then in no circumstance could I ever imagine us putting a kangaroo curtain around Australia and closing all the doors.
I'm because, you know,
there are 13 million people in 3 million square miles. We're overblessed with resources.
And rather than assimilate, come and express your own culture here and get together as community groups. And that continues today. You know, that's incredibly important and I think makes Addison Road very unique.
Craig says Addison Road is about more than just food relief.
What it really is just a connecting hub, a connecting force.
Food is just a mechanism to connect.
So, you know, people come and see that we're packing food hampers. That's, you know, that's 5% of what happens at Addie Road. And all the other stuff is much, much more important. The importance of food is that we can all connect through it. We meet organisations and communities that we otherwise probably never would. And that creates a whole range of supports, networks, initiatives that otherwise wouldn't happen.
For example, at the start of the pandemic, there was a rise in racism. Down at Addie Road, they were talking about the experience of that and what they could do.
And all of a sudden, a Racism Not Welcome campaign was born. And now the Local Government Association of Australia has, you know, supported that campaign, and we're working hard to bring that to life in every LGA around the country. That started because all of these communities come together through and at Addie Road, and that's how we hear about these issues. What it's taught me is the importance of these very local, granular connections. The more Addie Roads we have around Australia, the stronger we are as a community, the better every community is able to tell their story, and I think the more equitable society that we will have.
You guys have got this very packed. Were you good at Tetris as a kid?
That's right. Real life big Tetris game.
Hannah and Kim are from the Junction Neighbourhood Centre.
200?
I'm surprised to learn where they'll be delivering these hampers.
They are going to the eastern suburbs. It would be unfair for us to think that even in areas of wealth or that look maybe like they've got it covered, that there isn't still systemic suffering or hardship or, yeah, challenges.
You did it. Great job.
Thank you so much.
This wasn't the last stereotype that I'd see broken while I was down here.
My name is Jane Meredith and I'm a criminal defence lawyer. I looked around my community and thought, it's a fairly wealthy community. I know a lot of people were feeling, well, you know, we've got it pretty good here. People kept saying, aren't we lucky, aren't we lucky? So I just heard something on the radio about Addie Road and I thought that's worthy. So collected a bit of food and it kind of grew from there.
Jane and a couple of friends put boxes all over the affluent North Shore, suburbs like Cremorne and Neutral Bay. A social media campaign began to grow.
What's the fascinating thing is people often disparage places like Mossman. You know, let's face it, everyone makes jokes about Mossman. They do.
Oh, I don't know about that.
They do.
They do.
But I've got to say, people have bent over backwards.
Jane's project brings over 2 or 3 carloads of donated food every day. They worked out it's over 7 tonnes and counting.
You know, there's talk about this great divide in Sydney. Well, I tell you what, everyone said, no, we want to help, we want to do something, knowing where this food was going.
Do you think it's disappointing that you have to have organised it through this DIY sort of thing and there isn't government support?
It is disappointing. I think it's disappointing. And they're not funded well. We don't mind doing this, but why should, I suppose in a sense, why should you have to?
We always say we've got to help people that ask us to help them.
Addie Road CEO, Rosanna Barbero.
But the biggest question is, why are we doing this? You know, the day that we should celebrate Freedom Day is when we close down all these charitable band-aid approaches.
actually we're not all in this together. We like to think we are, but the needs that certain communities have and the responses we've got to have got to be informed by learning more about what's really going on.
Sam Mostyn is an Addie Road volunteer. Among other things, she's also served on a long list of boards. Her work straddles the corporate and policy worlds.
Sadly, over many years, so much of what happens in communities has been outsourced from governments and is as far away from those that actually have the big levers of power and the levers of good reform. And when you see it working, you realise what's missing at the top of the system.
Among the pallets of hampers ready to be delivered, I'm surprised to see the town of Walgett listed. It's over 600 kilometres from here.
People were asking us for water. We have the kind of poverty here and powerlessness that I haven't seen in many poor countries that I've worked in.
That part of far west New South Wales came because of direct connections that ended up in Addie Road because of trusted relationships. That shouldn't be left up to the community sector and the luck of finding an Addie Road to do it. There must be a complete breakdown in a system where this is relying heavily on these moments of personal connection and luck to get this done.
Addie Road operates on a tiny budget, but Sam explained the solution is more complex than just throwing cash at the problem. A local, holistic approach is key.
That's investing in place-based reforms and place-based investment in communities that brings together all parts of a system in that place. So that's governments of all levels, it's philanthropists, businesses, the people who live there and work there, and those in most need. And there's already been a lot of trials of this around the country in relation to a whole lot of issues that we're dealing with. But the best responses are when we trust communities in the act of a place-based response. So this is not separate from the economy. This is actually how we build in that resilience.
Whereas our federal government, they give all the money to these mega structures and mega organisations, which have a place, but they are not the community. Well, they don't know. They don't know who the community is, and they need us to find out where the community is.
When a large public housing block in Camperdown went into lockdown, Addie Road knew the pets in that building. Within 24 hours, they had dog food packs delivered.
But we knew because we're there. We're amongst the people.
Amongst the people. It sounds so simple. When did that become so foreign?
I do have to apologise to my fellow volunteers because when the music's cranking, I sort of sing a bit to myself, and I'll tell you what, I'm no Frank Sinatra.
Talking about government and politicians sometimes feels as useful as shaking a fist at a passing cloud. My faith in our elected officials is as thin as an Addie Road cardboard box, but it's restored a little when I meet this next volunteer.
Jahar Dib, member for Lakemba. Just here volunteering, like I do. I try and get here a couple of times a week, start the day in the morning bright and early, and then get on with it.
This isn't Jahad's electorate, by the way, but these hampers help people in his community.
People see politics at the moment for what it is, and it's not filling people with confidence, and that's actually really sad. I think it's a sad situation where people have lost a bit of faith in politics. What we need to do is make sure that they don't lose faith in their politicians. Look, and this is sort of no slight on some of my parliamentary colleagues, but there's a lot of my colleagues who talk about doing stuff and they're really good with a photo, but they need to be a little bit better at actually doing the work. They need to be there.
It's interesting to hear you sort of be a little bit cynical as well towards the that system.
I know. I'm sure I'm going to get a couple of phone calls from colleagues, but mate, speak it as it is. You know,
talk is cheap.
Absolutely, talk is cheap. And you can see straight through the BS, and people are sick and tired of the BS, and especially at a time like now where what they actually need is they need people to stand up and to do things. And what we've actually seen during this pandemic is the heroes that have stood up and the leaders that have stood up are not necessarily the elected leaders. They're the community leaders. They're the unsung heroes. Servant leadership is actually that. It's more than a photo. Everyone will take a photo, but the best moments are the ones that are never actually captured.
How are the other volunteers to work with? Are they okay?
Well,
I'm listening.
This lady, some of them, they're good, they're great. They're nice people, they're really good.
Sydney is opening up. Kim Dung, who's been out of work for months, is having trouble containing her excitement.
Just a short time. I'm back to work when my son's back to school.
You seem very excited about that.
Yeah, but just hope.
Right, just hoping that everything opens up okay. Yeah, yeah. Is she good, Mum?
Yes.
Soon, families like Kim and Michael won't need the Addie Road hampers. but many will need ongoing support. Other factors that contribute to food insecurity remain.
What we're seeing moving forward is more inequality, more job insecurity. I see more people that feel that they are stigmatised.
So with all that in mind, what's driving you to keep coming back here day after day to try and figure this stuff out?
Because I believe that there are a lot of people like me that want to see change, to reimagine an Australia. What is wrong about society has been unveiled, and the haves are a small minority and the have-nots are suffering. And so they're asking why.
The Dignity Business was produced by Mike Williams. The sound engineer was Russell Stapleton. Find out more about Addie Road on the Earshot webpage. Around the corner from Addie Road is a community oval known as Henson Park. This week over on our sister podcast, The History Listen, we're sharing the tragedy and the triumph of an icon of Sydney's inner west. Not many know that at one point, Henson Park was a lake. Here's a taste of the story.
Okay, this is the remnant bank that went down into what was known as the Blue Hole. So what happened with one of the boys who lived in one of these houses, came out of his back gate, came down the bank, right down the bank, saw a duck's egg, Nicholas Tremlett reached for it, drowned.
Nicholas is one of nine kids that we know of who died in the waterhole.
It was a tragedy. All these kids, Trevor was only four, the oldest one that drowned here was 16. And there were two sets of brothers that died. One went in and the other went in to try and save him, and they both drowned. People thinking, my goodness, there was a petition for residents about how many kids are going to drown before we do something. And the water was seen as the great danger. There were no public pools in those days. In fact, there weren't a lot of playgrounds for kids to play on.
So the council bought the land from Daly and did the responsible thing and made it an official outdoor swimming pool.
They even put a dressing shed up.
A cunning way to solve the problem.
But unfortunately, the New South Wales Department of Health said the water was so polluted, so stagnant, that it had to be drained.
Even though it wasn't drained yet, they renamed it Henson Park after the mayor, Thomas Henson. By now it was 1928, and they were desperate to stop names like Daly's Death Pit from catching on.
Edmund Stanley Rowe became the chief engineer. He took it all over. He actually got a boat and he got Thomas Daly and his son to row around the brick pit to show where it was the deepest.
That's like something out of a picture book.
It is. He was an engineer by trade. Edward Stanley Rowe was a genius.
But before all that, Rowe would have to figure out how to drain the lake.
Find out by listening to the History Listen podcast. Look for it on the ABC Listen app or your podcast platform of choice. I'm Miyuki Okiranta, and I'll catch you next time on Earshot.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.